We'll get started. We don't have a quorum, but we will get started anyway. Commissioner, would you like to come up and tell us all about yourself?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Phillips, the Commissioner at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I believe you have a handout like this.
Yep.
Okay, it's an abbreviated version. A little smaller slides. I hope the size of the type doesn't give you problems. Okay, the first slide talks about the benefits of the program, you know, completing infrastructure projects, promoting a job agenda through infrastructure, strengthening construction and manufacturing jobs. These infrastructure projects also leverage substantial private and public sector investment. They provide financing for costly community infrastructure, and they encourage the redevelopment of abandoned and underutilized sites. Slide three talks about the first of the three programs that I'm going to talk about today. It's the Greater Minnesota Business Development and Public Infrastructure Program. The governor's request is for $5 million in bonds, GEO bonds, for infrastructure for undeveloped industrial parks in Greater Minnesota attached to business expansion projects. It's the eligibility is in Greater Minnesota. It's a local match required, private leverage. These are projects that are around economic development projects, so we take applications for these on an ongoing basis. If you look at the history, we received $4 million in the 2011 special session for this program. These kinds of projects enhance the tax base for the local community and create new economic development opportunities. This program was started in fiscal year 2004, and it's been funded several times over the subsequent years. There's a one-to-one match required for projects under this program. Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you want to take questions as we go along, or do you want me to finish? And
well, we do have one question, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, Commissioner. On slide three, basically on any of these other ones, I guess I haven't looked over them, but I'm guessing they're maybe similar in nature. Are there waiting lists for businesses to go in these areas, in these undeveloped industrial parks that you're going to kind of finish off or whatever? What's the time frame?
Commissioner Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scott, these are funds that are available as projects develop. So these we don't do in cycles. You'll see in a minute when we talk about redevelopment where there's a long queue, and we do two application cycles a year. And those are more where there's projects waiting to be funded, and we do an analysis and prioritize and things like that. These are more for the opportunities when a company is ready to come in and create jobs, but there's a public infrastructure component to the project that would make the thing happen. That's what these, we take these on an ongoing basis.
Okay, thank you.
I hope that helps.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Well, just on slide four, just a few examples of very recent projects. The one up in Virginia, it was a $300,000 award from this program, leveraged another $600,000 and other funds to expand an industrial park. There's a company called P&H Mine Pro, is building a new facility up there and adding quite a few jobs, about 40 new jobs, in addition to retaining their existing employment. Second project is down in Jackson, $160,000 award, leveraged $15 million in private investment. That was AGCO, the manufacturer of large farm tractors down in Jackson, and then a project in Winona. Those are just some examples so you just get a feel for what to do. So that's the business infrastructure program. The second one I want to talk about is our redevelopment grant program. Governor's request is for $5 million in GEO bonds. And this is where we assist communities to recycle obsolete or abandoned properties for new industrial, commercial, or residential use. This is a statewide program. We run competitive grant cycles twice a year, I believe January and August. So we're just ready now in March. We'll be making awards sometimes in later March for the January cycle. The I can give you some information about this. So this is for the encouragement or redevelopment of a property that's been disadvantaged in some way, and then we want to try to bring it back into productive use. So there's a lot of job creation and increased tax base with these projects. It was started in about 1998. We did get $2 million in the 2011 special session from of general fund money. Again, the GO bond dollars go for public improvements. We use general fund money when we have to leverage private private investment.
Representative Nardis?
Mr. Chair, just had a question. I noticed on that Wadena project, the old grain elevator just kind of piqued my interest. That's owned by the city of Wadena? Is that, or is it? I'm just curious how you repurpose an old grain elevator and what that might involve.
Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not sure on Wadena what the, that, some of these examples might be, because again, we have GO dollars and we general obligation dollars, and we have general fund dollars. Very often we use the general fund dollars when we're repurposing or doing brownfield projects that involve a private purpose. So that the Wadena elevator could have been redevelopment using general fund dollars for a private purpose, and probably a business going in there and repurposing it to use as a for job creation.
I'm not sure, but it may be something that's still a part of the tornado destruction where there.
It could have been. I know that I'm very familiar with the tornado destruction in Wadena, and that there was a grain storage facility that was involved. So it could have been involved in cleaning that up, that site up, possibly.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Norris.
And that basically, we have, in my community, we have an old mill that's an eyesore, and it just piqued my interest. Maybe we ought to do something.
Okay.
In the future, that side. It's just a side issue. It just got me thinking a little bit. That's all.
Representative Hausman.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I'm assuming, because you're from the department, you are, that all of the projects you fund are about ultimately employment and economic development. You don't fix property up just to fix it up. You fix it up in order to create.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, that's absolutely correct. In other words, we prioritize things that provide the maximum amount of employment or increase in tax base, or especially with the GO dollars, it has to be public and have a public purpose. Again, with the general fund money that we get occasionally, we can do some more with the private sector. But it's all about jobs or creating tax base.
There is some public
Commissioner Phillips, I would have a question. And I'm going to give you a what for or an example. Mm-hmm. If the city of St. Paul, I don't think they own the Children's Museum, but if they did, and they wanted to remodel it and enhance it a great deal, but it didn't really include infrastructure, would that be something that would qualify?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that's the case. These are for infrastructure projects usually.
Mr. Chairman, to respond to that question, the vast majority of these projects are basically abandoned sites for the most part, and we go in and remove whatever impediments on that site to make it useful when there's a developer or development in hand. So it is really developing, trying to recycle land that is obsolete. I'm not sure just rehabbing a building like Children's Museum or Science Museum would be eligible. I'm not saying it's out of the question, but it would be difficult.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both for testifying today. I don't know if this is for the commissioner or who, but certainly throughout these materials and your presentation so far, you've been talking about these dollars creating jobs, and certainly part of the debate at the Capitol here and other places is whether or not that money borrowed by the state and paid for by extracting money from people against their will to pay off those bonds and debt service, and then that money redeployed by a public entity has a net creation of jobs or not. So I'm curious as to whether or not your efforts to prepare this presentation or look over your programs, you have done an analysis of how many jobs are actually killed by extracting these dollars to pay off these bonds from the private sector, and how do they offset those that are ostensibly created?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that we've done any analysis on that end, but I would remind you that the general obligation dollars on here have to have a public purpose. This is not the private side of the obligation, what we're talking about today. So there would have to be a public benefit for the project.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner, you're saying that that it is not, the purpose is not for jobs, it is for taking care of infrastructure or for public, I don't know, I'm just reading 2,370 jobs here on page 2.
Well again, we prioritize projects that are repurposing, as Mr. Coleman pointed out, that are repurposing, brownfield properties or things like that, that then could possibly attract private development and jobs. So, yes, we do look at, again, projects that would likely to create jobs and employment would be our top priority. That's our department.
Representative Roskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. Commissioner, is there the ability, or I don't know if there's the ability or not, to come up with that calculation about how many jobs in the private sector are potential jobs are eliminated because, on the other side of the equation, as I pointed out earlier, is that something that the department could do?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not sure. I could ask our economist if there would be any way to put a finger on that. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Thank you.
We're going to call the meeting to order officially now. Now that we have a quorum, Representative Fabian, I'm sure, has read the minutes and would like to move the minutes.
So moved.
Any discussion on that? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's carried. And Commissioner Phillips, mm-hmm. I'm just going to, normally don't do this, but if you bring that information to us that Representative Driscoll asked for, that's awesome. And you do need to bear in mind that some people look at it as a lemon and some people look at it as lemonade. So go ahead, continue.
Mr. Chairman, I'm very comfortable. If that's something we can calculate, we'd be happy to provide it.
Good.
Slide 6, just again, somebody looked ahead that there are just several projects mentioned there. I won't go through them unless somebody has questions about them. These projects have to demonstrate a need. Our current grant, Ron, I mentioned, will be released later this month. Just to give you an idea for the demand, there were 27 applications received in January, 10 in Greater Minnesota, 17 in the Metro. The request totaled $10.1 million, and we have $2.4 million available. So we always have a queue for these redevelopment dollars. There's always more demand than we have resources. So I'm just going to point that out. That was slide 7. Slide 8 is the third program that we're bringing. There's a recommendation for $10 million in GO bonds for the joint Minnesota Department of Transportation and DEED initiative to invest in public infrastructure transportation improvements associated with business expansion projects. And very often when we have significant economic development and business expansions, there is a transportation component. And this is a statewide. We have competitive grant cycles. The history of the project, it was piloted last year. There was 12 projects, 4,000 jobs, about $18 million in private sector development. The awards were made in December of 2010. We jointly review these applications with the Department of Transportation. MnDOT puts some trunk highway funds in the pot, and indeed repurposed some of their business infrastructure grant money in the pilot last year. And there's currently an RFP out to test the waters to see what would be under consideration this year using $20 million of MnDOT funds. And we could do more project if this funding is approved. There's a couple examples on slide 9 of projects that were done recently. And they do range. These are some of the larger projects, but it ranged down to in Aiken County where we improved a half a mile of county road so that the peat company could transport their product, things like that. So there's an economic development project that creates jobs, and there's a transportation component, a public transportation component associated with it.
Commissioner, I have a Representative Fabian. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, mm-hmm. for being here today. Throughout your presentation, and we hear this a lot, mm-hmm. You talk about the number of jobs associated with mm-hmm. these. Can you give me some sense for how you calculate the number of jobs that have been created, or you know, how do you arrive at that 4,000 number, for example? Thank you.
That's the cumulative of the information provided by the companies that were, that the projects where we're providing the transportation component, those projects have identified as being created, correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just and point of clarification, those are jobs created, or those are just people that are on the job, and maybe they were working on a different road project last week, but now they're working on this one.
Commissioner Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, these are jobs that have been created by the private sector associated with the project that we are doing the public transportation piece for.
Mr. Phillips, before I go to Representative Halsman, yeah. Like you mentioned here, Perm, $6.7 million award. How do people know that you do this?
Mr. Chairman, we put out we publish in the State Register. There's an RFP put out by the Department of Transportation that we're looking. There's a grant cycles.
So an average citizen probably doesn't know what you just said. So it would really be up to the representatives and the senators to let their citizens know where to look and how to apply and things like that?
Well, Mr. Coleman.
Kerry Coleman, for the record. When we did the first TED round, we involved all the associations tied to the truckers, shippers, the chamber, all the county engineers that have an active role in it, the district engineers for MnDOT that kind of have an ear on the ground where the local political pressure is coming from economic developments. And we did this for about 6 months, about as intensive as we could get, held meetings around the state. Because this was a pilot project, we really wanted to get really good, great projects that we'd come back to the legislature and say, this is what, you know, if we can work together, you know, use some trunk highway funds, use some bond proceeds, not just to do trunk highway stuff, but to do the infrastructure needed. You know, this is the type of projects we can get. And we had a real good response. We had one project that dropped out because the company wasn't ready to sign on the dotted line. They have since, so now they need some money. The UPS shipping center down in southeast Minnesota. So it's generated a lot of interest, and there's a lot of individual stories in each one of these projects, but I don't think there's a lemon among them. So that's how we did the outreach. Plus, we had a lot of legislators also that were aware of this because we did try to push legislation to create the program and get some non-trunk highway bonds, non-GO bonds to set it up, and that didn't go over real well.
Representative Halsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in light of some of the comments being made today, I think there continues to be such misunderstanding about geobonding, but I would just cite as an example a recent one for Thief River Falls, the airplane hangar that the state did as a request from DigiKey. That's an international company. They want to be... they get their product to market in X amount of time, but they showed us pictures of the airplane that had to be thawed out every morning in the winter and the brush that brushed off the runway that was frozen. And what they said to us is, we want to add 200 jobs. That's what we're adding. So that kind of information, as we look at some of these economic development projects, they come right from the businesses and the information they're giving us. Representative Scalzi would tell you the story of St. Jude when she worked on a transportation project. The jobs numbers that the private sector believes they can grow as a result of a small investment on the part of the state come right from those private companies. So I think there's always this skepticism, and yet this really is one of those economic development partnerships. And now Representative Scalzi can name probably another at least half a dozen major companies that she's working with in her area who worry about transportation congestion, and they're working with her on telling those stories and the limiting factor they have in expansion of their businesses. So that partnership has, and those are specific projects. Yours are across the state and in some at perhaps smaller scale, but I think the ideas are the same. They come right from those partners that you're working with.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct, Senator.
Representative Raskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Chair, members, we have a lemon that's close to my district, and it's not only appearing to be a small lemon, but a large lemon. It's called Elk Run, and it's at Pine Island. And members, it was funded, as I understand, out of this program.
No.
Oh, it was not. Okay. No. This isn't economic development transportation dollars. Maybe that was. Was that through MnDOT? Does anybody know? I don't know, but it was bonded. It was bonded dollars. Representative Rucavina might know.
Representative Rucavina.
After much pushing by Speaker Swigum, it got funded.
That's right.
Oh well, I wasn't here then, Representative Rucavina. But thanks for reminding me how it originated. But what we have now is apparently the promise. I think it was originally hundreds of jobs. I don't remember. We were supposed to have 250 jobs 2 years ago. And there were supposed to be some benchmarks that MnDOT was supposed to follow to ensure that a portion of those jobs came forward, and there was actually concrete poured and other things before the state went in and made an investment of $38 million in a Cadillac interchange that is currently almost complete, and no assurance that the jobs are going to follow. So members, I would be very weary of the approach of chasing jobs from the focus of economic development transportation dollars. If we do at all go in this direction, certainly there is need to build in those benchmarks, those requirements in terms of performance to ensure that those jobs are actually happening. Incidentally, just up the road about 15 or 20 miles from the Elk Run area, is the intersection of U.S. Highway 52 and Goodhue County Road 9, a place at which, within the measure of about 10 days, two different accidents killed three people. And it's a place where we need true infrastructure dollars to fix a problem that exists, the highest or second highest fatality location in greater Minnesota and rural Minnesota that MnDOT's got. And as we look at the competition of these dollars, I think we need to look at, are we going to focus on chasing economic development with some of these, or are we going to try to save lives, and what are our priorities? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just remembering the safety and mobility part of the budget in 2010. GMSE had a budget, and it listed four projects, and I don't know if Elk Run was one of those, but those were designated mainly for areas that had high accidents or they couldn't get product to market. So it was the interchange problem or it was a safety problem. But I do have to say, Representative Hausman indicated, the St. Jude Medical, they were begging us because they said, we're a worldwide company. If we can't replace that bridge and get people in and out of our facilities, we're going to go somewhere else. They could have gone to California. They're all over Europe. They're a home-based company here. We replaced that bridge for them, and they built a building with 600 employees in it, and they want to double the size of their operation. So you can't let these companies leave Minnesota. That's the one problem that we have in Minnesota. Our infrastructure has not kept up with the needs of our homegrown companies. These are high-paying jobs. We don't want to lose those. So just as a matter of information.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Viscalzi, I appreciate the fact that you're sensitive to businesses leaving the state of Minnesota, and I hope that you sign on to my permitting bill this year, because that's one of the things that we're trying to do is keep businesses here. When we had the discussion last year with House File 1, We talked a lot about jobs and economic development and businesses expanding outside of Minnesota. And I've seen that happen over and over again in District 1A, where good family-owned businesses have the good fortune to be able to expand and they move. And we need to move forward creating a business climate in the state of Minnesota that's conducive to private growth. And I hope that you will support me in my efforts to do that. Thank you.
I'm almost have this feeling that Representative Lanning should be up here, and we're on state government finance or some other committee other than capital investment. But go ahead, Commissioner Phillips.
Well, if there's no other questions on the TED program, I would just point out that DEED also, this is just for informational purposes. I'm sure these projects will have their own hearings. But when there are local projects, very often we administer the issuing of those bonds. So I made a list of the potential projects that I believe that are under consideration in your committee, just for informational purposes. And really, that's all. I just was going to wrap up to say, in this package, there was $20 million of GO bonds for those three programs, the business infrastructure, the redevelopment, and the TED program. And then, just again, for informational purposes, the local projects that we administer. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
If we let Mr. Kuhlman talk a little bit, someone will probably think of a question they can ask you. Mr. Kuhlman.
Mr. Chairman, I originally sat up here with the commissioner that talked about the support for the infrastructure programs at DEED, which I also oversee on a part-time basis with my other hat as the Public Facilities Authority. But I'll talk about the Public Facilities Authority request, and you should have a handout in your packet that has green and blue paper. And it's has kind of our logo up on top, Bell Public Facilities Authority. And we're requesting money for in the governor's bonding bill for three different items. One is the state match to federal US EPA capitalization grants to finance the Clean Water Revolving Fund, which does wastewater, stormwater, also provides money for various non-point programs administered by PCA and Department of Ag that address, for the most part, clean water activities, you know, feedlot runoff controls, septic systems, and things like that. The drinking water program is a revolving loan fund as well. The federal government requires a $1 match for every $5 of federal funds. The PFA is a AAA-rated revenue bond issuing entity. Both of these revolving funds are AAA-rated by all three rating agencies. They have a fairly long history. Our loans are general obligation bonds from municipalities that do municipal wastewater, stormwater, and drinking water systems. And I'll have Jeff explain the kind of the process in a minute. Our second request is for the Wastewater Infrastructure Funding Program, or WIF, which has been around for numerous years, and that's a grant program for the high-cost projects. The first program, the revolving loan funds, those are loans to municipalities that we provide at a minimum 1.5% below market rate to communities and offer additional discounts when the project's fairly high cost in smaller communities. The WIF program, there's two ways to access that program, and it is grants. It's designed for try to keep real high cost projects at least affordable, not cheap, but affordable. One is through the revolving loan program, the Clean Water Revolving Loan Program, when the cities are building municipal wastewater. If the costs for operation, maintenance, and debt service exceed 1.4% of median household income, we provide 80% of the construction costs over that amount to help kind of write down those user fees. Our average municipal user fee for wastewater using the WIF program is probably in the mid to upper 40s per month for households. The second way to access it is we partner with the USDA Rural Development, which also has a loan grant program federally funded, and they'll do 8 or 9 projects a year, usually in the very small communities, populations in the 300 to 500 population, sometimes less. The costs tend to be fairly extensive, over 10, 12 years ago when we started this partnership, they were sending federal money back to Washington because once they used the grant money up, no one wanted the loans because they wanted 40-year loans. So to keep that federal money in the state and also to get them to follow the state priority list, they're willing to follow the priority list established by the state of Minnesota if we match their grants. So we started matching their grants at a 65% of what RD calculated was the grant need. They would provide 35% plus all the loan funds that projects needed. That not only kept all the federal funds that they were allocated in the state, but we've historically over the last 10 years funded one or two additional projects from the national pool, because projects that leverage other funds tend to rank fairly high. So we've been very successful in getting a lot of these very small communities that missed out on the grant programs in the early days when there was a lot of grant money flowing from municipal wastewater funded. The third request in the governor's bonding bill is Lake Superior Poplar River Water District for $3,600,000. And that's up in Lake County. The beneficiaries primarily are the Lutzen's Lodge and Resort and the ski area and the Superior National Golf Course. Both facilities take a lot of water out of the trout stream that DNR is trying to get them at certain stages to stop doing that. But it takes a lot of water out, and evidently to the point where DNR wants them to shut down. They've worked out a deal basically to pump water from Lake Superior where the water is plentiful and kind of preserve that trout stream. So that's kind of what that project is, kind of keep those two businesses, which really is the only tourism attraction or the primary tourist attraction up in that county, and employs a lot of people in both facilities. So with that, that's kind of our request. Part of the governor's bonding bill also is the $25 million in WIF. There's $5 million in that for the Central Iron Range Sanitary Sewer District. And that was a project that was forced to proceed. Last year, we provided them the maximum WIF grant that we're allowed in statute, which is $4 million per project. When we calculated their grant need, it was over $13 million. So it's kind of a fiscal hardship on them. They've asked their legislators to introduce bills. I know I've asked MMB and the governor's staff to include some funding for that project this summer as well when we're putting that together. Try to keep the system affordable for the residents up there. It serves several communities, and the incomes in those communities aren't exactly very high, so the percentage is almost like 2.5% of the median household income is going for sewer. So these funds will help that project along. With that, I'll let Jeff kind of explain the process we use at the state of Minnesota for funding projects and kind of a little history of how we do it.
State your name for the record and then start.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Jeff Freeman with the Public Facilities Authority. The second page in your handout, and I'll just go quickly through some of these, is a summary of loans made by fiscal year through the Clean Water Revolving Fund. Shows the dollar amount and the average interest rate. These are below market rate loans, and on every loan we make, we calculate an interest savings to the community and its taxpayers based on a conservative estimate of what their borrowing rate would have been if they had gone and issued their own bonds in the private market. So the interest savings is an important measure that we have of the value of the program. You also see the loans made as they're throughout the state by RDC region. On the back side of that page is a detailed breakdown of the sources and uses of the Clean Water Revolving Fund. This is a permanent revolving loan fund, so the repayments that come back in support future loans. Point out the state funds at 6% there, and there is federal money as well at 22%. Most of the loans, as you can see, are actually made from revenue bond proceeds, the PFA revenue bonds that we sell. But the key there is that those state funds match the federal dollars and are required for that. And also, together with the federal dollars, that provides the equity component that allows for the subsidized below-market rate loans to provide the savings to communities. The next page is a similar breakdown of the drinking water revolving fund. It's been around for about 10 years less, so it's a smaller fund, but operates on the same principle. And on the back side of that page, you can see a similar breakdown of the sources and uses of funds. And then you come to the green sheets that are small to read, tiny print, I apologize for that, but this is the Pollution Control Agency's full project priority list for the for clean water projects, primarily wastewater projects, but there are some stormwater projects as well. The projects are ranked by the PCA based on environmental and public health criteria that are spelled out in their rules. This is really a five-year window of projects that are in various stages of planning, design, and a number of them getting ready or starting construction. So it's the funding for all of the PFA programs are really focused on two factors. One is their priority rank on this list, and secondly is the readiness to proceed of the project. We don't actually award funds until the project has taken bids and is ready to start construction. And there are certain milestones, especially for the WIF grants, where projects can have funds reserved once they've at least completed the planning work and have been approved for a funding commitment by USDA Rural Development. Terry talked about that part of the program. Or they've made it onto the intended use plan for the loan program and have submitted the design plans and specs, and at that point we can reserve WIF dollars. And so you will see some of the shaded cells represent dollars that have been reserved from the WIF program, and the projects are now completing the design work and getting ready to bid this spring. The projects listed with the bars all the way across have been funded already. This is our fiscal year 2012 list, so this was approved last August. And so a number of projects have already gone ahead, and many more are getting ready for bidding this spring. I'll call your attention to a few columns across under the heading of PFA financing programs and base programs. You see the heading that says CWRF, Clean Water Revolving Fund, Loan 2012, IUP, Fundable Range. IUP stands for Intended Use Plan. It's a federal, it comes out of the federal program requirements. It's a public document that spells out basically how we're going to use the fund each year. The projects with dollar amounts in that column have completed the planning work and are working on design plans and specs right now, getting ready to bid this spring. There's another column that says CWRF principal forgiveness. There's a small amount of the federal funds that are required to be given out essentially as grants. The term principal forgiveness is used in the federal law. And then you see three columns for our second capital budget request, the WIF grant program. The first column there are funds that have been awarded or reserved from existing funds, primarily the funds that were appropriated in the bonding bill last July. So all of those funds have now been committed to projects. Many of those projects are already underway, and the others will get started this spring. The next column over, WIF grant estimated need, that's based on the affordability criteria that Terry described and the information that the cities have given us. We've calculated these are the estimated need for that WIF grant, the projects that need that additional assistance to make those projects affordable. And then there's a cumulative total on that column. Not all of these projects will get funds this year if they're with funds appropriated for the program. They'll go to the projects that are actually ready to go. Some of these are still in the planning stage. We don't tie up money for projects that are in planning. We emphasize to cities you need to work on getting your project through the planning process, find a site, get it through the plan spec approval, the environmental review, and then within the local city government, just the financing plan, how they're going to pay for it, and deciding to actually go ahead with the project. So all those things have to be done before we actually commit funds to the project. Generally, when you look at that cumulative total, we generally consider that any amount of money that gets appropriated to the program, you probably can look about double that number going down the column, and that's roughly the projects that would probably be able to receive those funds this spring that are actually going to be ready to go. I can't tell you exactly who those are. They're all working on design right now. There's a deadline of March 28th for submitting plans and specs for this year, and we'll know more after that who's going to be ready.
I should also mention, when cities are eligible for WIP, this is not an overly subsidized program. It gets to the bottom line of household sewer fees. Like I said, average sewer fees about $45, sometimes run up into the $100 range, depending on the cost, because we only subsidize 80% of the cost once the cost hit 1.4. A lot of times, even though cities may have the plans and specs ready and stuff, when they start looking at how we're going to pay for this and what type of subsidies are available and what options are available, it also delays the project. And we want them to take a close look at what they're proposing to build and see if there's cheaper alternatives, which the engineers are supposed to do as part of the planning process. But just because they made the list and they want to proceed doesn't mean they've got the will to take a bite of the apple at this time.
Representative Swidzinski.
Mr. Chair, my question kind of goes along those same lines. So you do request from the city or the municipality that they indeed have a plan, or that they have actual funds in place when it comes to funding their end of the project before you kind of move forward as far as that's concerned?
Mr. Coleman.
Mr. Chair, I should know your name from your part of my part of the country.
You might know his name, you just can't say it.
I know.
Thank you.
My wife's his cousin, but he doesn't know that, but she told me. Lazinski from Minnesota.
Oh, very good.
Now, I got sidetracked.
Fine.
Oh, financing plan. Yep. One of the requirements, you know, not only do they have to bid the project, when they ask to get placed on the IUP, you know, we say, okay, if we place you on the IUP and you're high enough for the cutoff, if you go through all the hurdles, we guarantee you we'll fund it when you're ready to be funded. One of the requirements, though, is we want them to make sure they have the sufficient revenues to operate, maintain the system, and whatever revenues they need to pay debt service. So it's, you know, a lot of times these things get hung up in rate studies and special assessments and how they're going to pay for it. And there's a lot of options there, but that plan has to be in place before we issue a contract.
Mr. Coleman, you've been here for quite a while. I think actually you told me you were thinking of retiring, but you might not want to announce that yet. But since you've been here for quite a while, as in your history, does the legislature sometimes get in your way a little bit and identify all the projects they'd like you to do?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, it has varied over the course of the years, and sometimes I bring projects to the legislature saying, you know, that this, because our rules and state statute, the WIF is all state statute, doesn't always fit every single case. And there's sometimes projects out there that just need a little help sometimes, and the legislature has been very kind to me in funding some of those requests over the years, and they've also been kind to some local constituents that sometimes want to go beyond our program and get funding. So it's varied all over the years, but I think for the most part, the legislature has recognized that
you know, we have a process and a priority list and certain guidelines of affordability, and not 100% of the projects fall under that, but 95% or 99%, we do a good job using this system. And I've never been upset or mad because the legislature has earmarked a project that they felt deserved to be funded that was didn't quite fit in our mold. And I've been very fortunate to have legislators listen to me when I've seen needs that go beyond our statutory authority and appropriated money. Like Central Iron Range is an example. Or just really high cost, even though they had to do it and they were willing to bite the bullet. It just makes me nervous to have that level of debt. So I'd like to see $5 million. There's also another case that I mentioned recent, just to you earlier today, the city of Morton, which opened bids, were willing to match USDA rural development grants there, but RD is out of funds, and the project came in a little higher. And the cost-cutting measures on that project makes the engineers over at PCA as well as rural development very nervous in their ability to operate and maintain that system. So that will, in a very small amount, like $160,000, I know there's a bill in for that project, and I would strongly support, encourage, consider that one. Very small, very low-income community. Their rates are going to be very high. And the last thing I want is a system that has maintenance problems because they cut out manholes and stuff. So,
thank you.
Does that answer your question?
That answers my question. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My committee, State Government Finance, has had Mr. Coleman and Mr. Freeman before us to go through all of these same requests. And we have, as a committee, we believe that their ranking system should be followed. We also have noted that there are going to be requests that do not fit under their funding guidelines. And they are requests that we, as a committee, may want to suggest that we give some consideration to. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. And we will have our report as a committee to you on Thursday.
Mr. Freeman?
Mr. Chair, just have one more minute. I'll just explain briefly the rest of what you're looking at. There are clean water legacy programs. They're not in our request now. They were part appropriate last year, but this shows projects that are have applied for those funds that are available this year under the three programs that are administered by the Public Facilities Authority that receive those clean water legacy, those dedicated dollars. And then to the right you see some columns for our other funding partners, USDA Rural Development being the primary one. Terry talked about how we work with them. Also the DEED Small Cities Development Program grants, and there are some other programs as well. We really see it an important responsibility of ours to for all the projects on the priority list to look at all of the different funding sources that are available. We communicate with those other state and federal agencies regularly to look at how can we put the different funding sources together or coordinate the funding to fund the maximum number of projects and best meet the needs of those communities. So that's why you see so many other columns going across. There is an alphabetical list if anybody's looking for a particular project after the green sheets. And then the blue sheets are a very similar approach. Fewer programs, focuses more just on our drinking water revolving fund, but similar in the approach and the process that's used for the drinking water program.
Representative Lee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to make a couple comments about the Central Iron Range Sanitary Sewer District since it's been mentioned, and it's half in my district. It's actually a kind of a unique project that serves four different communities, Chisholm, Buell, Kinney, and Great Scott Township, and although that we had to make some statutory changes in order for it to qualify. I think as Mr. Coleman explained, it's a really a community with a lot of low incomes, and it's a big project because they're going to be serving an entire region, not just one little town. And so it's more expensive than you would normally see. And in addition to that, I know that this has been done before. I know that Mr. Coleman would know more about that than me, but I know in Representative Erdahl's district, there was the same exception made for, I think, Litchfield. But, you know, it's been done before when there's been specific projects that are serving a larger region or have greater needs or in low-income populations. So I would just ask members to consider that when they're looking at the projects.
Thank you very much. And we are not having any business in the House tomorrow, so there's no committee meeting tomorrow. And we are adjourned.